The English New Testament and the Court of Rome. Chapter 9. The English Envoys at Orvieto. The envoys of the King of England appeared in the character of the saviors of Rome. This was doubtless no stratagem, and Wolsey probably regarded that thought as coming from heaven, which had visited him during the weary sleepless night. The zeal of his agents increased. The Pope was hardly set at liberty before Knight and de Casale appeared at the foot of the precipitous rock on which Orvieto is built, and demanded to be introduced to Clement VII. Nothing could be more compromising to the pontiff than such a visit. How could he appear on good terms with England, when Rome and all his states were still in the hands of Catherine's nephew? The Pope's mind was utterly bewildered by the demand of the two envoys. He recovered, however. To reject the powerful hand extended to him by England was not without its danger, and as he knew well how to bring a difficult negotiation to a successful conclusion, Clement regained confidence in his skill, and gave orders to introduce Henry's ambassadors. Their discourse was not without eloquence. "Never was the Church in a more critical position," said they. "The unmeasured ambition of the kings who claim to dispose of spiritual affairs at their own pleasure, this was aimed at Charles V, holds the apostolical bark suspended over an abyss. The only port open to it in the tempest is the favor of the august prince whom we represent, and who has always been the shield of the faith. But, alas, this monarch, the impregnable bulwark of your holiness, is himself the prey of tribulations almost equal to your own. His conscience torn by remorse, his crown without an heir, his kingdom without security, his people exposed once more to perpetual disorders, nay, the whole Christian world given up to the most cruel discord. Such are the consequences of a fatal union which God has marked with his displeasure. There are also," they added in a lower tone, "certain things of which His Majesty cannot speak in his letter, certain incurable disorders under which the Queen suffers, which will never permit the King to look upon her again as his wife. If your Holiness puts an end to such wretchedness by annulling his unlawful marriage, you will attach His Majesty by an indissoluble bond. Assistance, riches, armies, crown, and even life, the King our master is ready to employ all in the service of Rome. He stretches out his hand to you, most holy father, stretch out yours to him. By your union the Church will be saved, and Europe will be saved with it." Clement was cruelly embarrassed. His policy consisted in holding the balance between the two princes, and he was now called upon to decide in favor of one of them. He began to regret that he had ever received Henry's ambassadors. "Consider my position," he said to them, "and entreat the king to wait until more favorable events leave me at liberty to act." "What?" replied Knight proudly. "Has not your holiness promised to consider his majesty's prayer? If you fail in your promise now, how can I persuade the king that you will keep it some future day?" De Casale thought the time had come to strike a decisive blow. "What evils," he exclaimed, "what inevitable misfortunes your refusal will create. The emperor thinks only of depriving the church of its power, and the King of England alone has sworn to maintain it." Then speaking lower, more slowly, and dwelling upon every word, he continued, "We fear that His Majesty, reduced to such extremities, of the two evils will choose the least, and supported by the purity of his intentions, will do of his own authority what he now so respectfully demands. What should we see then? I shudder at the thought. Let not your holiness indulge in a false security which will inevitably drag you into the abyss. Read all, remark all, divine all, take note of all, most holy father, this is a question of life and death." And de Casale's tone said more than his words. Clement understood that a positive refusal would expose him to lose England. Placed between Henry and Charles, as between the hammer and the forge, he resolved to gain time. "Well then," he said to Knight and de Casale, "I will do what you ask, but I am not familiar with the forms these dispensations require. I will consult the Cardinal Sanctorum Quatuor on the subject, and then will inform you." Knight and de Casale, wishing to anticipate Clement VII, hastened to Lorenzo Pucci, Cardinal Sanctorum Quatuor, and intimated to him that their master would know how to be grateful. The Cardinal assured the deputies of his affection for Henry VIII, and they, in the fullness of their gratitude, laid before him the four documents which they were anxious to get executed. But the Cardinal had hardly looked at the first the proposal that Wolsey should decide the matter of the divorce in England when he exclaimed, "Impossible! A bull in such terms would cover with eternal disgrace not only His Holiness and the King, but even the Cardinal of York himself. The deputies were confounded, for Wolsey had ordered them to ask the Pope for nothing but his signature. Recovering themselves, they rejoined, "All that we require is a competent commission." On his part, the Pope wrote Henry a letter, in which he managed to say nothing. Of the four required documents, there were two on whose immediate dispatch Knight and de Casale insisted. These were the commission to pronounce the divorce, and the dispensation to contract a second marriage. The dispensation without the commission was of no value. This the Pope knew well. Accordingly, he resolved to give the dispensation only. It was as if Charles had granted Clement when in prison permission to visit his cardinals, but denied him liberty to leave the castle of St. Angelo. It is in such a manner as this that a religious system transformed into a political system has recourse, when it is without power, to stratagem. "The commission," said the artful Medici to Knight, "must be corrected according to the style of our court, but here is the dispensation." Knight took the document. It was addressed to Henry VIII and ran thus: "We accord to you, in case your marriage with Catherine shall be declared null, free liberty to take another wife, provided she have not been the wife of your brother." The Englishman was duped by the Italian. "To my poor judgment," he said, "this document will be of use to us." After this, Clement appeared to concern himself solely about Knight's health, and suddenly manifested the greatest interest for him. "It is proper that you should hasten your departure," said he, "for it is necessary that you should travel at your ease. Gambara will follow you post, and bring the commission." Knight, thus mystified, took leave of the Pope, who got rid of de Casale and Gambara in a similar manner. He then began to breathe once more. There was no diplomacy in Europe which Rome, even in its greatest weakness, could not easily dupe. It had now become necessary to elude the commission. While the king's envoys were departing in good spirits, reckoning on the document that was to follow them, the general of the Spanish observance reiterated to the pontiff in every tone, "Be careful to give no document authorizing the divorce, and above all, do not permit this affair to be judged in Henry's states." The cardinals drew up the document under the influence of De Angelis, and made it a masterpiece of insignificance. If good theology ennobles the heart, bad theology, so fertile in subtleties, imparts to the mind a skill by no means common, and hence the most celebrated diplomatists have often been churchmen. The act being thus drawn up, the Pope dispatched three copies, to Knight, to de Casale, and to Gambara. Knight was near Bologna when the courier overtook him. He was stupefied, and taking post horses, returned with all haste to Orvieto. Gambara proceeded through France to England with the useless dispensation which the Pope had granted. Knight had thought to meet with more good faith at the court of the Pope than with kings, and he had been outwitted. What would Wolsey and Henry say of his folly? His wounded self-esteem began to make him believe all that Tyndall and Luther said of the Popedom. The former had just published The Obedience of a Christian Man, and The Parable of the Wicked Mammon, in which he represented Rome as one of the transformations of Antichrist. "Antichrist," said he in the latter treatise, "is not a man that should suddenly appear with wonders. He is a spiritual thing, who was in the Old Testament, and also in the time of Christ and the Apostles, and is now, and shall, I doubt not, endure till the world's end. His nature is, when he is overcome with the word of God, to go out of the play for a season, and to disguise himself, and then to come in again with a new name and new raiment." The scribes and Pharisees in the gospel were very antichrists. Popes, cardinals, and bishops have gotten their new names, but the thing is all one. Even so now, when we have uttered, detected, him, he will change himself once more, and turn himself into an angel of light. Already the beast, seeing himself now to be sought for, roareth and seeketh new holes to hide himself in, and changeth himself into a thousand fashions. This idea, paradoxical at first, gradually made its way into men's minds. The Romans, by their practices, familiarized the English to the somewhat coarse descriptions of the reformers. England was to have many such lessons, and thus by degrees learned to set Rome aside for the sake of her own glory and prosperity. Knight and de Casale reached Orvieto about the same time. Clement replied with sighs, "Alas! I am the emperor's prisoner. The imperialists are every day pillaging towns and castles in our neighborhood. Wretch that I am! I have not a friend except the king your master, and he is far away. If I should do anything now to displease Charles, I am a lost man. To sign the commission would be to sign an eternal rupture with him." But Knight and de Casale pleaded so effectually with Cardinal Sanctorum Quatuor, and so pressed Clement, that the pontiff, without the knowledge of the Spaniard Angelus, gave them a more satisfactory document, but not such as Wolsey required. In giving you this commission, said the Pope, I am giving away my liberty, and perhaps my life. I listen not to the voice of prudence, but to that of affection only. I confide in the generosity of the King of England. He is the master of my destiny. He then began to weep, and seemed ready to faint. Knight, forgetting his vexation, promised Clement that the king would do everything to save him. Ah, said the Pope, there is one effectual means. What is that? Inquired Henry's agents. Lautrec, who says daily that he will come, but never does, replied Clement, has only to bring the French army promptly before the gates of Orvieto. Then I could excuse myself by saying that he constrained me to sign the commission. Nothing is easier, replied the envoys. We will go and hasten his arrival. Clement was not even now at ease. The safety of the Roman Church troubled him not less than his own. Charles might discover the trick, and make the Popedom suffer for it. There was danger on all sides. If the English spoke of independence, did not the emperor threaten a reform? The Catholic princes, said the papal counselors, are capable, without perhaps a single exception, of supporting the cause of Luther to gratify a criminal ambition. The Pope reflected, and withdrawing his word, promised to give the commission when Lautrec was under the walls of Orvieto, but the English agents insisted on having it immediately. To conciliate all, it was agreed that the Pope should give the required document at once, but as soon as the French army arrived, he should send another copy bearing the date of the day on which he saw Lautrec. Beseech the king to keep secret the commission I give you, said Clement VII to Knight. If he begins the process immediately he receives it, I am undone forever. The Pope thus gave permission to act, on condition of not acting at all. Knight took leave on the 1st of January 1528. He promised all the pontiff desired, and then, as if fearing some fresh difficulty, he departed the same day. De Casale, on his side, after having offered the Cardinal Sanctorum Quatuor a gift of 4,000 crowns, which he refused, repaired to Lautrec, to beg him to constrain the Pope to sign a document which was already on its way to England. But while the business seemed to be clearing at Rome, it was becoming more complicated in London. The king's project got wind, and Catherine gave way to the liveliest sorrow. I shall protest, said she, against the commission given to the Cardinal of York. Is he not the king's subject, the vile flatterer of his pleasures? Catherine did not resist alone. The people, who hated the Cardinal, could not with pleasure see him invested with such authority. To obviate this inconvenience, Henry resolved to ask the Pope for another cardinal, who should be empowered to terminate the affair in London with or without Wolsey. The latter agreed to the measure. It is even possible that he was the first to suggest it, for he feared to bear alone the responsibility of so hateful an inquiry. Accordingly, on the 27th of December, he wrote to the king's agents at Rome, "Procure the envoy of a legate, and particularly of an able, easy, manageable legate, desirous of meriting the king's favor, Campeggio for instance. You will earnestly request the cardinal who may be selected to travel with all diligence, and you will assure him that the king will behave liberally towards him." Knight reached Asti on the 10th of January, where he found letters with fresh orders. This was another check. At one time it is the Pope who compels him to retrograde, at another it is the king. Henry's unlucky valetudinarian secretary, a man very susceptible of fatigue, and already wearied and exhausted by 10 painful journeys, was in a very bad humor. He determined to permit Gambara to carry the 2 documents to England, to commission de Casale, who had not left the Pope's neighborhood, to solicit the dispatch of the legate, and as regarded himself, to go and wait for further orders at Turin. If it be thought good unto the King's Highness that I do return unto Orvieto, I shall do as much as my poor carcass may endure. When de Casale reached Bologna, he pressed Lautrec to go and constrain the pontiff to sign the act which Gambara was already bearing to England. On receiving the new dispatches he returned in all haste to Orvieto, and the Pope was very much alarmed when he heard of his arrival. He had feared to grant a simple paper, destined to remain secret, and now he is required to send a prince of the church. Will Henry never be satisfied? The mission you desire would be full of dangers, he replied, but we have discovered another means, alone calculated to finish this business. Mind you, do not say that I pointed it out to you, added the Pope in a mysterious tone, but that it was suggested by Cardinal Sanctorum Quatuor and Simonetta. Bicassale was all attention. There is not a doctor in the world who can better decide on this matter, and on its most private circumstances, than the king himself. If therefore he sincerely believes that Catherine had really become his brother's wife, let him empower the Cardinal of York to pronounce the divorce, and let him take another wife without any further ceremony. He can then afterwards demand the confirmation of the consistory. The affair being concluded in this way, I will take the rest upon myself. But, said de Casale, somewhat dissatisfied with this new intrigue, I must fulfill my mission, and the king demands a legate. And whom shall I send? Asked Clement. De Monti? He cannot move. De Quisis? He is at Naples. Araceli? He has the gout. Piccolomini? He is of the imperial party. Campeggio would be the best, but he is at Rome, where he supplies my place, and cannot leave without peril to the church. And then with some emotion he added, I throw myself into his majesty's arms. The emperor will never forgive what I am doing. If he hears of it, he will summon me before his council. I shall have no rest until he has deprived me of my throne and my life. De Casale hastened to forward to London the result of the conference. Clement, being unable to untie the knot, requested Henry to cut it. Will this prince hesitate to employ so easy a means? The Pope, Clement declared it himself, being willing to ratify everything? Here closes Henry's first campaign in the territories of the Popedom. We shall now see the results of so many efforts.